Our last opening keynote speaker, third and last, is Dr. Lamar Hasbrook, who's currently the executive director of NACHO, the National Association of County and City Health Officials. And they represent, of course, our 2,800 local government health departments. And Lamar is going to talk about and help us appreciate how population health really boils down to a local set of activities and policies. He served as the director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, responsible for protecting the health of 13 million residents there. He developed a five-year plan, implemented various aspects of the Affordable Care Act, applied for FAB accreditation, and he also led the development of the statewide blueprint for population health and healthcare integration. He received his MPH at the University of California at Berkeley. Go Bears. His MD at UCLA, School of Medicine, and completed his residency training, internal medicine at New York Hospital Cornell. He's a former epidemic intelligence officer at the CDC, primary care policy fellow at HRSA, and the recipient of numerous awards for both his government and non-government work. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Lamar Hasbrook.
Good afternoon, everyone. So let me echo my excitement in being here as well, and I want to thank Dr. Martin and his team. Dr. Martin is a colleague of mine, a friend, and also we worked in the trenches for some 6 months or so for the Governor's Office of Health Innovation and Transformation on this very issue. And so a lot of what I'm going to be talking about was informed by that work and informed by those conversations we had at the table with local public health officials, plans, payers, and providers, and looking at this this difficult, sometimes difficult, conversation. Also like to recognize my colleagues. Judy and Georges and I, we are collegial. We're kind of in this together, but we do not plan our talks together. So you will see some redundancy. And coming last, I get to kind of put it all together. But what that means to you is that the signal should be highlighted. The signal should be stronger because we independently came up with comments around the importance of this issue today. And if you see something being repeated, that means that it's a signal that's worth paying attention to. So here's the good news from my perspective, and this has been said and alluded to, is the Affordable Care Act has really been a godsend in the sense that with its language on prevention, its language on primary care, its language around population health improvement, innovation models, and the like, it's really kind of forced health care delivery to really think beyond the walls of the facility about this thing we're calling population health. So that's number one. In addition, it has encouraged healthcare delivery as well as public health to work together in ways that historically we have not. And then thirdly, an unintended but positive consequence of this is that it has allowed population health integration in a way that can leverage the strategic advantages from both sectors, both public health and healthcare delivery. But in addition to doing this, it has ushered in a number of challenges, many of which have already been alluded to. And let me just highlight three. This is going to be a frank conversation. As you can see, it's low tech but high touch. And I'm going to have the difficult conversation with you in terms of what happens in these rooms when we put these two sectors together. Number one, there's an unfamiliarity that's there. There are members from both sectors that don't really understand each other, where they're coming from, and being a physician as well as a public health practitioner, I understand and can recognize that very quickly. Two, there is a lack of mutual appreciation for the value that each partner brings to this collective endeavor. And three, and as has been alluded to, there are some real profound definitional issues to be grappled with. So when I say population health, as a public health practitioner, I may mean something very different than a clinician when he or she says population health. So the issue is, what do we mean by population? Are we talking about a patient panel? Are we talking about covered lives from an employer standpoint? Are we talking about a geographical catchment area? Are we talking about a municipality? So we have to grapple with that so that we're on the same page. And this might take different definitions in different contexts, but everybody at the table for that specific community needs to know what we're talking about when we say population. What do we mean by health? How are we going to define that health? What's important in terms of health, in terms of tracking health of populations and communities? And then lastly, how do we measure improvement to our targets? So what are the measures and indicators we're actually going to use in trying to measure this thing called population health improvement? So I thought I'd share with you a story about me that happened when I was facilitating about a year ago. I was facilitating a very interesting panel for a statewide conference in Illinois. And the panel had retail pharmacists on the panel. And so we had Jewel Oskol, the large supermarket, had their representative there. We had Walgreens. We had CVS Caremark was there. And then we had a representative from a mom-and-pop pharmacy. But the audience, interestingly enough, was local health department commissioners and administrators and governmental public health officials. And it became very clear that this panel was needed because I had witnessed a very healthy and robust resentment from local health departments towards retail pharmacists. And from my standpoint, as the top doc of the state, all I cared about was vaccination coverage. Let's cover as many people as we can get covered from as many convenient means as possible, and let's get the job done so we can prevent vaccine-preventable diseases. But for local health department administrators, it was a business case. It was the sense that they were being edged out competitively of an area that historically had been really their market. I mean, immunizations and vaccination is a real important stream of revenue for them, and it became very clear that they were very hostile towards retail pharmacists. So we had this very difficult conversation and exchange, and what it did was it illuminated the fact that, number one, retail pharmacists weren't out to take their client or to take their customers. They were really trying to do a value add. It was also important to recognize that as someone's coming in to get their medicines, maybe get their blood pressure checked, maybe get their vaccination shot, it's another touch point to get them into healthcare. And often in some communities where there was collaboration and understanding, it was the retail pharmacist that then may have directed them to the local health department to get additional services in nutrition or WIC or whatever the case may be. So it was very important to have this honest but very uncomfortable dialogue about who's working in the space, and an understanding that pharmacies in this case was not really trying to be a health home or take the business, but they were really trying to be a value add. So ACA, again, has served as a wake-up call. The genie's out of the bottle, as we all know. We all have to kind of work in the same sandbox. But it has really ushered in a number of opportunities. And what we need to understand is local public health, and I want you to understand that as a representative of NACHO and working with local health departments, helping them understand and helping us understand that this space of population health, even as it's being defined, is not proprietary. And in fact, what we need to understand is that whoever can do it better, smarter, faster, with some return on the investment, is actually going to be in that space and doing it. But in understanding that, we have to also realize that public health, and in particular governmental public health, needs to have a place at the table to communicate their value. Because healthcare delivery oftentimes is not aware of the value of public health. And so in doing so, they may be redundant in creating capacity where they don't need capacity. So let me just remind this audience that public health in many ways and in many places are the population health experts, and they are a significant lever for improving community health. They are so because they understand the process or the phenomenon of localness. All public health really happens at the local level. They have partnerships. They're out in the community doing inspections or convening things. And so they have these partnerships, and they understand localness. In addition, they are a natural and neutral convener of stakeholders as they're working with schools, as they're working with nurses, as they're working with community health centers and the like. So they have that as well. Community health needs assessment. Historically, public health, local public health, often governmental public health, has led these efforts and obviously have an expertise in this area. They know how to prioritize issues and use data to put together community health improvement plans, and they know well the impact and the importance of social and environmental determinants of health. They, in fact, provide what we now are considering or calling foundational public health services. Oftentimes, things that no one else can do or no one else is authorized to do, and we're currently looking at models, costing models for that, so we can secure the income and the funding that's needed. All that said, they're a partner you don't want to overlook, because they have the expertise that you're going to want and that you're going to need in terms of doing the things that you need to do related to population health improvement. So despite some of these historical tensions between these two sectors, there have been a number of models of collaboration. We've worked on a number of them in the state of Illinois. Many of these, again, have been instigated by the CMMI work or by community benefits or by common agendas through either health transformation or building a culture of health. Some examples include creating things like bonus pools to incentivize population health innovations. Something we've talked about in my previous state was regional health improvement collaboratives, having public health and healthcare delivery and other stakeholders in a geographical area coming together to really prioritize and doing these needs assessments, working synergistically to address some of the health needs and concerns. Maternal and child health, home visiting programs, taking those to scale, employing community health workers, looking at asset-based community development, alignment of quality measures, and many, many other things in terms of some of these best and promising practices going forward. So what do we need to maintain this momentum, and what do we need to continue to kind of take these best and promising practices to scale? In my opinion, we need four things. The first thing we need is trust. Let me say that again. The first thing we need is trust. We have to understand that both public health and health delivery, be it the hospital or the community health centers, are really going to be chiefly responsible jointly for improving population health. So when I talk about trust, I'm talking about the trust that both have something incredibly significant to offer to this endeavor. So we have to start there with this familiarity and with this trust, because that As it goes, if you are a person that is in clinical care, you may have a touch point with a healthcare provider once, twice, maybe six times per year. But every single day, 24/7, you got to go right back to your community, to your environment, and live there 24/7. Those are the things that are going to impact your health, as we've learned. So we need to get to a point where we can harness what we know about, be it the 10 public health accomplishments, which have led to expanding life expectancy by 25 years, be it the ROI work that APHA has really led in terms of seeing what the return on that investment is for public health, the clinical guide, the community guide, as has been mentioned, and what we know about social and environmental determinants of health, really to harmonize efforts to measurably protect the health and improve the lives of people in the communities beyond the walls of the facility. And this will yield us what we're going after, which is improved population health. So the first thing we need is trust. The second thing we need is truth. We have to continue having sobering dialogues and conversation, difficult conversations, about this intersection. So let's be honest about it. Population health improvement is a business proposition. And with any business, there are potential risks and benefits. From governmental public health, there's the concern that they are going to be nudged out. There's a concern that they barely have enough money to keep the doors open. There's a concern that they're struggling with unfunded mandates. And here comes care delivery onto their turf, doing things that traditionally they have counted on for revenue. They're fearful of layoffs. They're fearful of health delivery poaching their staff that they've grown for 15, 20, 25 years. On the side of the delivery systems, there's a community benefit scenario. They need financial benefits. They want this higher reimbursement rate. So they're forced with the question, do they expand their bandwidth to add additional expertise that they have not historically done? Do they go and poach this expertise from the local health department? Do they fold in community health workers, which can expand their reach beyond the facility and go and do these home visits and things like that? Do they risk redundancy of the system? Do they risk redundancy of their own business model? And so for large systems, they may be able to expand the bandwidth and in some cases actually supplant governmental public health. But whereas smaller markets, you know, the rural places, the smaller health departments, it might be the governmental public health is the only show in town. And so this might force or help to support some of these collaboratives that we're seeing spring up all around the country. The bottom line is this. There are many ways to partner, and there are a dozen collaborative configurations, but it all starts, in my opinion, with trust and with a healthy dose of truth-telling. Thirdly, we need technology. An investment in technology is required because if you're going to have these two sectors work together, they need to be able to share the information. So be it meaningful use or GIS mapping of disease hotspots or service deficits areas, or if it's tools needed to track progress to targets, we're going to have to make some mutual investments in technology. And these might range from the very sophisticated integrated systems, interoperable systems, all the way to just the basics of sharing on a regular basis spreadsheets or, you know, confidential or encrypted email transfer of information. And then finally, the final thing we need to keep this momentum going, in my opinion, is we need a commitment to collaboration, a mutual commitment to collaboration. Because so often this is not happening, it's not occurring because of the tense suspicions and or the lack of appreciation between public health and healthcare delivery. And where it works well, we see that there is a solid and sustained commitment to collaboration in the service of population health improvement, however that's defined. And this collaboration is accelerated and expedited through the speed of trust, the speed of truth, the use of the appropriate technology, and a willingness to work beyond the usual suspects and the usual partners, and this includes other sectors such as schools and CBOs and FBOs and urban planners and community developers and employers and landlords and others. So in conclusion, let me say this. The fact is, this is not a either-or proposition. In my opinion, this is a both and imperative. What we want in working together and in coming together, we want both better clinical outcomes and improve population health outcomes. This will require us to broaden the tent in ways that are inclusive, not selective, and definitely not exclusive. And the sooner we embrace this reality, starting with public health and healthcare delivery, through a mutual investment of time, continual dialogue, financial and human resources, and yes, innovation, the sooner we will transform the health of the communities for the public good. And I'm very certain that if we continue this honest and sobering conversation, we'll get there. Thank you.